Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Tierney, the writer of the findings column for the New York Times Science section, asked last week in a column that he wrote for the Times, as you sort everything in the right bins, you probably assume that recycling is helping your community and protecting the environment. But is it? Are you, in fact, wasting your time? He elaborates in a piece that is titled The Reign of Recycling. It appeared last Sunday in the Sunday Review section of the Times, and yesterday in the same section, several readers responded. This should be a very interesting hour. It's something that most of us just take for granted, being socially conscious people, that you recycle. But what makes sense to recycle and what it doesn't make as much sense to recycle, it's kind of an examination some years later of a long piece that he did for the New York Times Magazine back in 1996. John previously wrote the Big City column for the Times Magazine and the Metro section, the Political Points column for the Washington Bureau, and an op-ed column. He is the co-author of Willpower, Rediscovering the Greatest Human Strength, and he writes often about social sciences and about general controversies in science and in medicine. John, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for inviting me, Kathleen.
Yeah, I must say that as I read it, I thought, wait a second, you're asking me to re-examine something that I have done faithfully for such a long period of time, and I'm sure that our listeners are in the same category. If anything, some cities are moving toward more and more recycling, but you call into question some of the very things that we've done every single day for years now.
Right, and it certainly hasn't made me very popular with a lot of Times readers. The first article I wrote back in 1996 set a record for hate mail.
Oh my goodness, did
Times
it really?
Magazine.
Whoa!
And as you saw yesterday, you know, in the Times, I think the entire letters column was, you know, devoted to denunciation.
Yes, it was.
So, it does surprise me, too, though, that I hear from a lot of people who say, God, you know, I feel so much better from what you said. I always wondered about this.
Hmm.
It shouldn't be a religion. So it's an interesting topic.
Yeah, it is interesting. It's going to be a great hour. Some recycling companies, you write, and I'm wondering why this is the case, have shut their plants and canceled plans for new technologies. The mood is really gloomy. Why?
Well, because prices for recyclable materials have plummeted. The prices depend partly on the price of oil. When you recycle plastic is basically made from petroleum. And if petroleum prices are really high, then the plastic has more value because it replaces some petroleum. But as that price goes down, it becomes a lot easier to make new plastic from, you know, from oil rather than going through all the processes of recycling it. There's also China used to buy an awful lot of our recyclable stuff, and they were not very picky. They wanted a lot of paper from here. People said they were using us as a forest. And we would ship them all this other stuff, too. And then they changed policies not too long ago and started getting picky and started turning back stuff that was contaminated. So that's been a big loss of an overseas market. The larger problem, as I say in the article, I mean, when I about this in 1996, people said, you know, just give recycling some time.
Mm-hmm.
That once we get the thing going, once more people know about it, it's going to become more economically worthwhile. But there's a long-term, you know, trend over centuries that the prices of raw materials goes down. It doesn't feel that way to us. We always think we're running out of things. And that's what began the recycling movement. It was this sense that back in the 70s, we're running out of oil, we're running out of natural resources, we have to conserve what we have. And that was exacerbated then, or added to in the 80s, there was a brief period when they closed a lot of old town dumps because there were new environmental regulations requiring, you know, much stricter safeguards on landfills. So people thought from that idea that we're running out of natural resources and the idea that we're running out of landfill space, they thought we have to do this. It's the only choice. But in fact, we don't really have to do it, you know, especially for a lot of materials.
Well, and the landfill space part of your article was really interesting, that you say if we, for the next 1,000 years, we're only using just a really minuscule amount of land. I never knew that. I thought we were using a whole lot of land for all this incredible amount of junk we get rid of.
Well, people, I mean, it's been this, the modern recycling movement really began around 1990 when, and it was this idea, there was this garbage barge that, you know, from Long Island that couldn't find a place to put its garbage.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Newsweek magazine had a thing, so the country will be covered coast to coast from, you know, with, there's no place to put it. Well, there was no space in the old town dumps. They were being closed, and people don't want to live right next to a landfill, so they, you know, cities, it's hard to, you know, to site one near a city. But it's quite possible to site these landfills, you know, out in a rural area where it's buffered from every, you know, no one really lives near it. There's a lot of greenery around it, and it's a tremendous economic stimulus. I visited one down in Virginia that, you know, this county had been one of the poorest counties in the states, had terrible schools. A landfill moved in there, and they just had the most beautiful schools. You know, I mean, they were taking New York City garbage and making, you know, and doing so well by it. They had much better schools than New York City has. You know, they had computers in every classroom, telephones in every classroom. So the great landfill shortage never occurred because, and garbage just doesn't really take up that much space. You compact it, you bury it, and then you cover it up and you turn it into a park.
To reduce carbon emissions, we could accomplish a lot more, you say, by sorting paper and aluminum cans than by worrying about yogurt containers, plastic bottles. Are those the two things, sorting paper, cardboard, aluminum cans, that really cut the carbon emissions significantly?
Yes, those are the ones when they, the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, when they calculate how much greenhouse or how many greenhouse emissions you're saving. On average, for paper and for cardboard and for metals, for each ton of garbage that you recycle, you save 3 tons of greenhouse emissions, which are avoided because you don't have to manufacture new materials. That's the chief reason you do it. So that does make some sense, and those things, those three materials are also, in many places, you know, relatively profitable to recycle, or not that expensive to recycle anyway. I mean, for all these things, if you ever factored in all the amount of people's time that they spend recycling at home and sorting garbage, none of it really pays for itself. But it does pay for itself for, you know, for a city's bottom line, for in some places. So those are the things that make sense, and you know, back when the EPA announced a national recycling goal, they said, you know, back in around 1990, they said, you know, let's get to 25%, and they warned people back then, you know, there probably isn't more than 35% of stuff in garbage is worth recycling, and that's mainly the, you know, the paper and the metals, some plastics maybe too, but instead, the idea got fixated in people that more recycling is necessarily better. So we should recycle, and people, and we should set these arbitrary goals of 50%. People said 75%. There are now places like New York and Seattle and San Francisco that have proclaimed this goal of zero waste.
Yeah,
you know, going to recycle everything, and it's just kind of crazy. It doesn't. It will cost a fortune because there really isn't a market for most of this stuff. And it doesn't really do that much for the environment.
One of the responses, you talked about the letters that were in the Times yesterday, and it is true they were all about what you had written, which makes sense, is don't we need to start looking at what it is we're using every day? There are a whole lot. We used to go and refill our milk bottles and refill our soda bottles and all of that, and we used to carry thermoses to work and not get plastic or paper cups for everything. And there's so much throwaway stuff right now that wouldn't it make sense to look at what we're using as utensils, what we're using in terms of plates and everything, and not use as much stuff that you throw out?
Well, you know, that's an intuitive feeling a lot of people have. But, again, intuition is not really that great a guide. I mean, you know, back when I wrote that 96 article, I remember, you know, people were I saw one of these recycling evangelists from an environmental group was telling the kids how awful it was to get takeout food and go to, you know, go to fast food. But in fact, when people did an analysis, you know, a McDonald's typically wastes less than a meal at home because they're incredibly efficient. Yes, there was the calculations were done that You know, that you know, people at home, when you cook at home, a lot of food gets wasted. For instance, Mexico, which has, you know, has back then had many fewer packaged products than we do, you know, but and they bought more fresh food and more things like that instead of this packaged stuff. Mm-hmm. But they actually wasted more per person because a lot of the food goes bad. And a lot of the products that we think are wasteful, people think, God, I remember I was in this third grade classroom and she was saying, isn't it terrible that they wrapped this plastic or this apple in styrofoam? In plastic. Well, the plastic keeps the apple fresh longer. It doesn't spoil. Another thing that I wrote about was, there have been places where it have banned styrofoam cups because they seem so wasteful.
Mm-hmm.
A chemist did an analysis, I think it was published in the journal Science, where he looked at the amount of energy that's required to make a styrofoam cup, and he compared that with the amount of energy that is used to manufacture a ceramic cup, and then the amount of energy that is used every time you wash it. And he figured out that unless you use that ceramic cup at least 900 times, there would be less energy consumed by using, you know, styrofoam. In other words, 850 styrofoam cups would use less energy than a ceramic cup that was reused 850 times.
Wow, that just seems so counterintuitive, doesn't it?
But see, there's so little material on styrofoam, and it's very efficient to make it. It's very light to transport. I mean, a lot of these things that we think that seem intuitively better to us are not really. Yeah, there was a great article in Reason magazine last month by Catherine Mangy Ward. It was a cover story called "Plastic Bags for You," and she just debunked so many of the myths about that. There's, you know, this massive plastic garbage everywhere. That she noted, among other things, these studies showing that when you do these reusable canvas bags, there's lots more bacteria in your bag. It's more. Plastic bags are so thin that they're very cheap to make. They're very cheap to transport. I mean, a paper bag is, you know, from a greenhouse standpoint, from greenhouse gases, is worse than a plastic bag. It's heavier, takes up more room in a landfill, and it's also more likely to biodegrade into methane, whereas plastic bag just takes up very little room, sits there, it doesn't biodegrade. It basically, you know, is trapping the carbon inside it.
But isn't there a problem with all the animals who are eating it and dying?
She pretty much debunks. I mean, the idea that this exists, that most of that stuff has been exaggerated. I mean, obviously, throwing garbage away anywhere is a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to clean things up. But, for instance, you know, when I wrote about this, there were people arguing that the putting deposits on cans and bottles was great because it was reducing litter. But, in fact, the best way to reduce litter is to pick it up. And states that just did that and hired people to do that had much cleaner highways than, you know, than putting that 5 or 10 cent deposit on things. And I mean, there should be fines for, you know, for throwing garbage away, for throwing anything in the ocean. But I think you'd be better spending your efforts doing that than thinking that somehow banning plastic bags is going to make a difference.
Mm-hmm. You suggest, wouldn't it be simpler and perhaps more effective to impose the equivalent of a carbon tax on garbage? Tell me more about that.
Right. This was I'm an economist at Bucknell University. Thomas Kinnaman had calculated. He did what I think is the most extensive, real, you know, cost-benefit analysis of recycling versus landfilling and incineration, and he really considered everything. I mean, he considered the environmental impacts, and there have been extensive, you know, calculations about, you know, the greenhouse impact, about the impact of a landfill. Does it decrease the property value of the place around it? He took into account the fact that that a lot of people enjoy recycling and are willing to pay for it. He called it the warm glow effect. So he factored all this stuff in, the social impacts of recycling, and he figured that sending a ton of trash to a landfill imposes about $15 in social costs, mostly through greenhouse emissions. You know, because if you recycle some of that stuff, particularly the paper and the metal, then you would reduce, you know, there'd be fewer new products made, and that would reduce greenhouse emissions.
Mm-hmm.
So he figured that if you put this $15 tax on every ton of garbage, that would essentially offset the environmental impact of it. And then you could decide, based on your local economics, how much you wanted to recycle and how much you wanted to landfill, but you wouldn't feel that you were, you know, doing something that that had no concern for the effect on the environment and on society. I mean, you could dedicate that money, say, $15 would go to some sort of fund that you know, for research into averting climate change or research or, you know, planting trees, something like that. Uh-huh. I think it would be a much more effective way to reduce carbon emissions than recycling.
Hmm. And so would flying less frequently on airplanes. You cite some statistics that are incredible.
Right. I mean, I think that I calculated that when you recycle a plastic bottle, the EPA calculates that it, you know, it does save a little bit of energy and it causes a reduction in greenhouse gases. But I calculated using their figures that in order to offset the carbon impact of flying from New York to London and back, you would have to recycle 40,000 plastic bottles. And that's if you're flying coach. I mean, because, and if you had a seat in business or first class, it's more like 100,000 bottles. And then the other thing about that is that even those bottles might not be enough. Because I spoke with Chris Goodall. He's a British writer who is a very devout environmentalist. He's done a book called How to Live a Low-Carbon Life. And, you know, he thinks our obsession with plastic is very misplaced because it's not really doing much to avert greenhouse emissions. And one of his calculations is that when the EPA and when British authorities calculate how much energy you're saving by recycling a plastic bottle, they don't take into account what happens when you use water to rinse it out. They basically start their calculations at the curb once it's there. And if you use hot water to rinse a plastic bottle before you toss it in the recycling bin, he calculates that you could end up basically using more energy and adding more carbon to the atmosphere than if you just threw it in the trash.
Hmm. Well, let's go to phone calls. We have many of them coming in right now, and one line is open. We will be sure to ask the question that John asks in his piece a week ago. What is a socially conscious, sensible person to do about all of this? Our phone number is 800-486-8655. John Tierney is the writer of the findings column for the New York Times science section. He wrote a piece a week ago in the Sunday, I always call it Week in Review, but it's not that anymore. It hasn't been for a long time. So it's review, right? Sunday review section for the New York Times, one of my favorite parts of the paper. And it questioned the whole recycling movement, wondering if we are wasting our time and looking what the carbon footprint is when it comes to landfills, when it comes to paper and aluminum cans and cardboard, et cetera. And it's a very interesting piece. He got a lot of negative response to it because yesterday, if you saw the Times in the same section where our trash goes, readers took issue with his Sunday Review essay saying that recycling had failed in economic and environmental terms. So let's go to you, and we'll do so in a moment. Lines are filled right now, but eventually there will be some openings at 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@WPR.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I do want to thank you before we start taking phone calls to everyone who contributed during our fall membership drive. We had more than 6,000 listeners pledge, 2,000 sustaining pledges, and 1,700 new members to Wisconsin Public Radio. You donated more than $775,000 to fund all the programs that are near and dear to you, and you are near and dear to us, too. Thank you so much for coming through. Thank you. All right, let's go to phone calls. 800-486-8655. John Tierney is our guest. He writes the findings column for the Science Times section of the New York Times. And we start with Jim in Rice Lake. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Kathleen. I had one quick question for your guest, Mr. Tierney. As I understand, in Europe, like they burn trash for energy. I mean, they use it in centralized urban locations. It saves all this recycling time and effort. And and it also reduces landfills. I'm wondering, could that model not work for the United States, especially given our centralized urban environment? Thank you. I'll take my answer.
Okay, thanks, Jim.
That's a great question, Jim. And you're absolutely right. That could work in the United States. The main disadvantage with incineration is that it's more expensive than landfilling, because the United States has a lot more open land than Europe does. So in a lot of places, it's cheaper to landfill. But as far as being an environmentally sound way to do it, it certainly works. And NPR had a great piece about incineration not too long ago, where the reporter, visited Europe, I think, or at least talked a lot of Europe. And in Japan and Europe, which are certainly very ecologically conscious, they have these incinerators there, and people are very used to it. And they use these, and modern incinerators are really clean. I mean, people live next door to them in Japan. There's very few pollutants from it. And she was asking, why don't we just do that here, instead of, you know, trucking all these recyclables around? And you do produce pretty clean energy from it. And it was interesting that she had on someone from the Natural Resources Defense Council, whose chief objection was, if we put stuff in an incinerator, it would interfere with recycling. I mean, basically, we have to keep the problem of recycling going in order. It's become a thing to justify in and of itself instead of a solution to a problem. So here you have a problem that could be solved. For people who don't like the idea of trucking garbage somewhere else, who think you want to keep it and want to do something with it instead of just covering it up, you could burn it, produce energy from it, and solve the problem. And yet people are saying, we can't do that because it's better to recycle. It's morally superior.
Thanks, Jim, for the call. Bob in Eau Claire, hi.
Hello. I obviously have a problem with your guest and the way he portrays recycling. And I know he's going to say, I think this is all good. I mean, but really, an incinerator, you know, sort of like not my backyard or not near my house, I don't think there you can say scientifically these are clean, a clean way of getting rid of waste. So I would like him to clarify that for me.
Well, you know, this is one of these arguments where you can point to any activity in the world and say, I'm not sure that's safe. I mean, the fact is these are very acceptable, or they're accepted in, you know, in Northern Europe, which are certainly not places that, you know, like to tolerate environmental risks. And I think there's been, certainly the not in my backyard problem exists. I mean, New York City, under Mayor Bloomberg, they wanted to build an incinerator, a modern one that would, you know, save a lot of the trouble of transferring garbage all over the place. But, you know, they want do what they stupidly chose to try and do it in Staten Island, which, although it certainly had the most open space for it, Staten Island has this, that's where our big landfill was, Freshkills, and Staten Islanders grew up hating that landfill and feeling it stigmatized them, and so they really were in no mood to take garbage. And I agree that it would be politically difficult to site incinerators, especially near, you know, in cities. So that, you know, alternative really is, I mean, you can try and do all this recycling, but that's so expensive and so much trouble that the alternative really, you know, the sensible economic alternative, I think, and the practical alternative is really going to be landfilling. Because as most places try to get up to, you know, higher rates of recycling, they're going to find it so expensive. And that's why when cities run into financial troubles, as New York has done and other cities, one of the first things they try to do is cut back on recycling because it's so expensive.
What do you think about composting?
I think composting is fine if you do it in your yard. I think the idea of trucking this stuff all around is pretty expensive to do, and you know there isn't. I mean, compost isn't that valuable a thing that you know that you need to do it, and that creates its own problems. I mean, New York City was we started in pilot neighborhoods here, you know, having to put our food waste away, and we were sending it to this composting plant in Delaware, and the neighbors were of that plant complained their kids it stunk so much, their kids were too nauseated to play outside, and last year they campaigned and got it shut down. So recycling processes are industrial processes too, and the neighbors of them don't like it either. So. And there have been a lot of complaints around the country about composting plants, that they attract, you know, seagulls, common. There are concerns about rats. There are big concerns about odors.
Mm-hmm. One of the people who responded to you yesterday talked about I don't know how much you know about this. I don't know anything about it. This San Francisco's composting program, he says they use food scraps and yard trimmings, and then it's used to produce rich soil for farmers in California instead of sending them to the landfill where they would produce methane gas. He also says the soil produced from the compost retains up to 20 times its weight in water, which, of course, would be significant during a drought.
Well, if food waste were really that great for producing soil, you know, better soil, they wouldn't have to force everyone to recycle it. I mean, you know, stuff that is really worth recycling will get done on its own. I mean, you don't have to force Walmart to recycle its cardboard boxes. It saves a lot of money doing that. And stuff that is really valuable to recycle, like, you know, like aluminum, when you recycle an aluminum can, that saves a lot of energy compared with manufacturing new aluminum. And, you know, that's why people go around, you know, collecting scrap metal, and they're profitable things. I'm very skeptical whenever I hear public officials saying this really makes so much economic sense, but then at the same time, they pass laws forcing everyone to do it. If it were really that good, you wouldn't have to force them.
Thanks so much for your call, Bob. Fred in Ashland, hi.
Hello.
Hi, Fred.
I got a question. Is the New York Times owned by one of the 189 families who hold the majority of the wealth of the United States?
I'm not sure what you're referring to.
What are you getting to here, Fred? We're talking about
my, my point is this, is that I've heard efficiency and money as being your primary motivators as far as common sense. But common sense doesn't have anything to do with, like, seven or eight generations down the road. So I think we as a people really need to sit there and reuse and recycle as much as we consume.
And well,
go ahead, John.
I understand people who feel that it is morally right to recycle and reuse, that it's morally wrong to throw away. And if that's as a moral belief, I'm not going to argue with you. I certainly respect it. You have a right to that moral belief. What I do question, though, is first, you know, do you have the right to force all your neighbors to act on that behalf? And the second thing is that, you know, I've heard people complaining, oh, that I'm, you know, defending waste, you know, the bottom line of waste handling corporations. Well, now that's not really, you know, who waste handling corporations like recycling because it's more expensive, and therefore it's more money for them. The people who pay for recycling are all of us. You know, towns and municipalities pay for this. Sometimes it's directly through garbage fees on each homeowner. Sometimes it's through general taxes. I mean, in New York City, started the recycling program, you know, back around 1990. And they had this idea that it was going to save them a lot of money from not having the landfill stuff. They were going to produce really valuable materials. And the city thought it would save money, you know, that all of us would save money and there would be more in the budget for other things. What actually happened is that since 1990, New York City has spent at least $1 billion extra on recycling. That if we hadn't recycled anything, the city would have had $1 billion more to... You know, we could have built dozens of schools with it. We could give every high school kid an iPad. So the fact is, the corporations that handle this waste are going to, you know, they're happy to put it in the landfill. They're happy to recycle it. They're happy to burn it. They'll do whatever you pay them to do. And for them, recycling's been a good thing. I mean, one of the reasons that it seems that people are so surprised to hear be questioned recycling, or to hear anyone question it, is that there really isn't any constituency against it.
Right.
I mean, the environmentalists like it, so do waste handling corporations. You know, it's more money for them. So, you know, there's really, I mean, the only people who really pay attention to this and in the past have been skeptical are the municipal officials who have to pay the bills for these things. They've done very careful studies of claims that you save money from recycling, and when they do these studies, they find that, you know, even in places that seem to have very favorable conditions like Seattle, where a lot of people do it, and this, they found that even there, you know, it at best breaks even, usually.
Hmm. So let me ask you, which you ask in your piece, what is, you want to do the right thing, you don't want to buy a lot of stuff that has to be thrown away, you've sort of got this Depression-era mentality that you mend things, you don't go out and buy new because you want to save money and you want to do the right thing. And I think most people are motivated by wanting to do the right thing here. So what is, you ask the question, a socially conscious, sensible person to do?
Okay, well, and the first thing I'd say is that when you say that doing the right thing, that varies from person to person. One thing I've written about in my findings column in the Times, there's been really interesting research about brain research about tightwads versus spendthrifts, and they're very different types. There's actually more tightwads than spendthrifts, but I think that affects how much it bothers you to throw something away, and it's a big personal question. Is it worth it to you to mend something, or would you rather save the time and use it for something else? And this is something that's a personal choice. I mean, I would rather spend time reading a book to my kid than sorting garbage, and I don't mind throwing it away. But other people feel that's really wasteful, and I respect that. So I would say the first thing is decide how important it is to you. And then if you are going to recycle, I would, and if you want to recycle, if it gives you pleasure, you should definitely do it. I would say, don't try to force your neighbors to do it, though. But if you do find it that it's fulfilling, that it feels morally right to you, I would say focus on paper and garbage metals. Some kinds of plastics, maybe. But really, I would focus on them and not worry so much. Glass is one of the worst things to recycle because, by the time it gets to the recycling plant, it's in tiny pieces. It's broken. Which it's contaminated all the other material, and it's hard to handle. It tends to break the recycling. It damages the equipment at the recycling facility. And then by the time they've sorted out all these broken pieces of glass, what they're left with is a bunch of glass that nobody really wants. They have to pay someone to take it off their hands. So, and with glass, you don't really save that much in greenhouse gases either. So I would say don't worry about glass. Don't pressure your city to include glass in the program. There's an odd thing with glass where people who want to set an arbitrarily high goal and say our community recycles 60% of its waste, they love to recycle glass because it's fairly heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And so it makes it look like you're recycling more of your waste. It increases your tonnage. But you're not, it's costing you a lot more money, and it's not really doing much for the environment.
Let's go to Fred. Thanks for your call. Willem in Colfax is next. Hi, Willem.
Hi. I have to disagree at first about your comment about glass, because glass can be constantly remelted and used. And I think if you throw it away, it lasts a long time in the environment, just like your example of the Styrofoam cup. I have pottery mugs that I've used for 30 years, so they're durable. They're pots that are thousands of years old. So Styrofoam, it doesn't retain the Styrofoam cup shape. It breaks down into tiny little particles that get into the environment. And I think that people that don't live in a rural area or don't understand farming and, how that nature, let's say, what is to happen with all this plastic that breaks down? It doesn't, it doesn't just disappear. It breaks down into little pieces. It's a problem with in the lakes and in the oceans and, I just don't agree that somehow this recycling is a bad idea. Would you prefer to have people just throw it in your yard? And landfills do take an amazing amount of space. There are landfills in areas close to where I live. There's one outside of Eau Claire that people haul junk from the Twin Cities and all over, and it's huge. It's not some little, a couple of acres. It's thousands of acres of landfills.
John.
Well, to put landfills in perspective, if you put all the garbage that everyone in America will generate for 1,000 years, if you think of the United States as a football field, all the garbage for the next 1,000 years, I think, would fit within the 3-inch line. So, America has an amazing amount of open space, and in fact, we have more and more open space because people are. There's much less land being used for farming now. We have more forests growing back. People are moving to urban areas. So it feels, if you're living in the suburbs of a city, it feels like things are getting crowded and we're losing open space. But what's actually happening in most of the country is that is that rural areas are being depopulated. So there's, I mean, open space really isn't a problem. Now, I certainly agree with the caller that I don't want garbage thrown in my yard, and you certainly, you know, shouldn't be throwing garbage away. But I don't think it's a problem when a styrofoam cup or a piece of plastic or anything else goes into a landfill. The modern landfills, they have plastic linings, clay linings, they're monitored. It basically just sits there. Basically styrofoam and plastic and glass, all this stuff came out of the ground. The glass was sand, the plastic was oil. And so basically they came out of the ground, we're putting them back in the ground. And in a lot of ways they're actually less of an impact on the environment because they're sealed up in this thing. It's like a big coffin there. And you cover it up with grass and you put a park or a golf course on top of it. So I don't see the big problem in just putting this stuff back in the ground if that's where it came from.
Well, one of the other places it's going, though, it would appear to me, and you've seen pictures of this, I'm sure, is the amount of plastic and bags and styrofoam cups that wind up in the ocean. And those are things that fish are eating, and they're dying from it. So if you didn't have all that junk, if you didn't have all the plastic, you're not likely to throw a canvas bag in the ocean, are you? All those things that are harmful to fish and to birds. And this is like the size of Africa, all this junk.
I wish you would, you know, I really urge you to invite Catherine Mangue Ward onto your show, who wrote the article for Reason Plastic Bags Are Good For You, because she, went in that article, went back and looked at this, it's always thrown around that there's this incredible garbage island out there, and she looked into this stuff and looked into the claims that all these animals are being killed by and found there's really not much basis for it. Paper bags and cloth bags have their own problems. That plastic bags are actually in a lot of ways less impact on the environment. So I agree we shouldn't be throwing stuff in the ocean. If they're out there, it would be great to clean it up. But I'm not sure how serious the problem is, and I don't know that recycling makes that much difference in terms of addressing that problem.
Where is she from? What's her name?
From Reason Magazine. Her name is Catherine Mangue Ward.
Catherine.
And they had a cover story called "Plastic Bags Are Good for You." I mean, it is funny when people talk about environmentalists are often really concerned about any trace level of contaminant or something that might make people sick in food. Well, I mean, when you look at these things that get reused, like these cloth bags, and some of the stuff that happens, they're much higher levels of bacteria in these things because, yeah, I mean, the reason that people started using plastic plates and things like that, and part of it was that people were really concerned about silverware and all the contaminants on that it's much cleaner to use disposable things. Fewer people get sick.
Do you use disposable silverware?
I don't use it at home, but it doesn't, you know, it's easier for me to do it at home, but I'm not actually even, you know, and I prefer using I guess it's stainless steel I have. It's more comfortable to use. But I think the fact by the time I wash it in the dishwasher, I don't know that I'm using any less energy than I would be if I just, you know, used a plastic thing. So
let's go. Thank you very much, Willem, for your call. And let's go to Tom in Appleton. Hi, Tom.
Hi. So so many things, but I've been asked to simplify. So I would at least like to disabuse, if not this guest, some of the listeners to the idea that plastics are not proliferating out in the landscape. So I've got a job that puts me, I guess you would have, the old term would have been waste areas, kind of all these no man's lands that nobody takes care of. It might be next to a road. This is in stormwater management to help hone in on this picture. There's junk as far as the eye can see, mostly plastic. Of course, there's aluminum cans and plastic bottles and glass. And one of the things, I've never been asked to pick garbage. I do other things out there, but I always pick garbage anyway. And one of the things that I find is there's always a bag handy because I just grab the next one I see and proceed to fill that up. These things are just everywhere, and this is just a lot of nonsense being spouted here. Like I said, I could go on into other areas. Evidently, it's okay to not truck glass around for recycling, but to mine more land for sand and truck the sand around to make new glass. This is cherry picking at its very worst.
John.
It's hard to argue with someone's intuitive, you know, feelings that I think this is wrong and right. I mean, you know, people thought that that was how the recycling movement began, thinking it would be so much more economical and so much better for everything if we would just reuse this. And we're, you know, there was this idea we're throwing away, you know, these treasures. But, you know, I mean, there's no shortage of sand in the world to make glass. And, I mean, glass has its own environmental problems. I mean, you know, there's some people like to just ban plastic. Well, if you ban plastic altogether, I mean, aside from the fact you wouldn't have iPhones, computers or anything like that. If you just did that and you went back to glass bottles, well, glass ends up broken all over the place. I'm sure that hurts animals too. So, you know, all these things have different impacts. And glass is, you know, to manufacture it, I mean, to ship glass bottles is, you know, it takes much more energy to do that because they're much heavier than plastic. And one of the reasons that recycling has gotten, you know, more and more difficult is that manufacturers have been so good at reducing the amount of material they use. I mean, instead of these bulky cans and plastic and glass bottles and kind of bulky containers that we used to ship food in, they'll make them now in these just really, you know, featherweight, you know, ultra-thin plastic envelopes, kind of, you know, the plastic pouches that you see. Now, this stuff is great. I mean, it's very good for the environment. It uses very little energy to make it. It's so lightweight, you're not spending energy to truck it around places because it's so lightweight. And then when you throw it in the garbage, it takes up very little room in a landfill. But it's really hard to recycle it because there's so little of it, it's hard to pick it out. It's not like a bottle that you can just easily sort. And there's so little material that it's just, there's not much you can do with it, even if you do manage to sort it out. So in a sense, in fact, I know some people who used to be devout recyclers who have said, you know, now that there's so much less stuff, you know, all this lightweighting trend, that they don't see, why don't you just throw that in an incinerator, burn it, and be done with it? Stop worrying about it so much.
John Tierney is our guest. He's the writer of the findings column for the New York Times science section, and he wrote a very interesting and provocative, of course, you can tell from the course of the conversation, piece in the New York Times a week ago yesterday in the Sunday Review section. And he asks in this piece whether or not recycling is helping your community and protecting the environment. Are you, in fact, perhaps wasting your time? The piece is titled The Reign of Recycling. Yesterday, there were a lot of readers of that column who took issue with what he had to say, and those were printed in the Week in Review. It's not the Week in Review, Kathleen. It's the... What is it called again? Why can't I never get this right? It's a... Review. The review. Thank you. It's just the review. The Week Review section of the New York Times on Sundays. So we'll take more phone calls in a moment. Tom, thanks very much for your call. The number is 800-486-8655. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to more phone calls. Karen is calling now from Associated Recycling of Wisconsin. Hi, Karen.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you for letting me allow to speak.
Sure.
I really want to address the misrepresentation that Mr. Tierney is behind the science and the environmental impacts of recycling and of landfill operations. I guess I will just address the landfill operation that these are. Yes, there are environmental protections, but these are not just entombed kind of things. They have the potential of some leakage, and so of the between the leachate, and we want to try and have the less hazardous materials in there. And so then also misrepresenting the composition of the things that go in there, that these are just inert and that they come from the ground. The plastics and all those items are a mixture of petroleum-based products and scientific other kind of things. So they're not just the natural type of products that there were years ago. We as the industry, the solid waste industry, are really dealing with the complexities of these products and how they're produced and what kind of impacts that they have. I also like to address the misrepresentation about composting. I guess overall I feel like these are using isolated cases to represent as a whole, say the situation in San Francisco. If something, composting as a whole, it does provide this great natural alternative, amendment to soil, and that if it is properly done, then there are no concerns, there are no smells, and so those kind of facilities will get closed down if they are not properly doing it. And there are many, many excellent examples of facilities that are doing it very well and creating this final product that is used to help the soils and grow better products and, or better foods and crops. Also with recycling, that has had a tremendous economic impact on our country. That it's not just the residential programs that you're noting that this New York City and the troubles that the city has had, but recycling, the municipal programs are provide the feedstock as well as the industrial or larger other kinds of manufacturing programs. They provide the feedstock for products and have a huge impact on our providing those feedstocks for the companies to make new products. I guess that's had a tremendous economic impact on the positive, and it's not addressing the whole picture.
John.
Well, I mean, my answer to people who say that it's a great economic thing is, then why do we have to have laws requiring it? I mean, you know, the people who back recycling, you know, it started with the idea that it was going to pay for itself. Then it got into where, well, we had these, yes, it costs more than landfilling, but it's worth it. And the idea was that the products would be valuable. But then there's been all this pressure to require companies to use a certain percentage of recycled products. That's because there really isn't enough demand for them, that you have to have these mandates to make people buy them. I mean, I'm sure that you produce, you know, that that if you spend a lot of money recycling something, you can produce some products that somebody will buy at a price. And there may be industries that appreciate that, getting basically this big subsidized product, you know, that I'm sorting garbage in order to help a company buy a cheaper raw material. It doesn't really make it a great economic activity. And, I mean, I think recycling benefits companies, but it's mostly, you know, homeowners and taxpayers who are paying higher bills as a result. And I think that money could be, you know, used to do other things that are more important, other environmental things, educational things.
Well, how did everybody then get so misguided, John? There are so many places in this country where you can no longer shop with plastic bags. They've gotten rid of plastic bags. Almost all communities have very extensive recycling programs. All of these people are, how is the movement so accepted then and even growing in this country if it doesn't do any good?
Well, it's a religion, essentially. I mean, it's basically, and I think in especially in secular countries where a lot of people have abandoned religion, people look for a substitute. And environmentalism for a lot of people is, there, you know, it's a great spiritual, it gives spiritual meaning, it gives a larger sense that you're doing something for the planet. And, I mean, religions can be very successful, and religions impose all kinds of rituals that don't really make, you know, rational sense. I mean, kosher food, you know, fasting, you know, all sorts of things. And I really think that recycling is mainly a religious ritual, that people feel good doing it, and especially people who feel guilty that they're, I mean, if you spend a lot of time flying on airplanes, if you have a country home, these things have a big impact on greenhouse emissions. And people feel that if they recycle their trash, they feel better. It's really a rite of atonement. And there is also this very intuitive feeling that people have always had, that we're running out of everything. We can't waste it. And I understand that intuitive feeling. But the fact is, and I've written about a lot of this, I made a $10,000 bet with someone who bet that we were running out of oil. And I didn't know anything about oil, but I just know the long-term trend is our problem in the future is not running out of things. And the most valuable thing, the only thing that really gets more valuable over the centuries is the value of our time. You know, human labor becomes more and more expensive. And I don't think it makes sense for, you know, parents who are pressed for time to be worrying about, you know, to be made to feel guilty for getting takeout food. I mean, I want people to have more time to spend on things that are more uplifting than sorting garbage.
All right. Thanks, John, very much for being with us. John Tierney, our guest. The piece will be on our Facebook page in case you missed it last week, and it's created quite a response in yesterday's New York Times as well. It's a New York Times opinion piece on recycling. John writes the column Findings for the Science Times Magazine section, and we thank him. Thanks to K.P. Whaley for producing this hour and to K.P. Whaley for on-air production. Thanks for listening.